Welcome back to the Breakside Podcast, here for episode 47. This is your ultimate destination for in-depth collegiate professional Frisbee discussions and interviews. I'm your host, David Adamitis. This episode's guest is a star in the Western Ultimate League, playing for the San Diego Superbloom. Last season, she was named league MVP and was listed as a top five player by UltiWorld in 2023. Introducing Kayla Helton. How you doing? Thanks for being here, Kayla.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I think it's a fun time of year. You are a few games into your season in the Western Ultimate League, and things seem to be ramping up a little bit. Off to a strong start. You're 2-0. How about you just give me a little rundown, how you feel personally, how the team's doing with the strong start to the season?
Yeah, I think having Seattle as our first game was a really good focus point for us because we've come in second both years of the league to Seattle, and that win has been a long time coming. So we had a lot of incentive in the off season to really focus on that game and come out strong at the beginning of the season. So really glad we were able to get that win. And then Colorado's roster was looking really good as well. I think they're one of the other top most athletic teams in the league with us. So that one was a battle as well, but glad we could win at home.
I love it. Start the season strong. How about you back me up just a little bit here? Obviously, there's so much work that goes into preparation for a season, so much off-season training, out-of-season training. There's a lot of meetings as a team. Like, what are the goals? What are we trying to do here? If you want to give me a little rundown, what did the off-season look like for Superbloom in particular?
Yeah, a lot of the Superbloom players play on a club team flip side. So we have a lot of chemistry built up there. And then we started having kind of like pods and early practices and things in December. So started doing throwing things and pod drills, stuff like that. But I think a lot of the players are individually trying to work on fundamentals and getting better. And that's mostly an off-season goal if you really want to make a difference in pro season.
Absolutely. And that's so important. I think that when a lot of people look at the sport of Frisbee, is they really glance over that it does take so much effort. Out of season, off the field, you know, people talk about watching film as one of the best ways you can get better, is understanding the game, raising your on-field IQ. There's so many little pieces to that. In your own particular life here in the realm of Frisbee, right, last season you're named MVP, kind of high expectations, I guess you could say, going around that. What are you going to perform this year? Did
yeah,
you, exactly. What was your mindset? Sorry.
I was going to say, it was actually both seasons.
Okay. We definitely need to shout that out there. Both seasons then. So level up those expectations there. What was your mindset? Did you feel that you had this pressure that, okay, I have to come out and perform again to a certain level? Like, this is the expectations that's set upon me.
Yeah, I set those own expectations on myself. So I'm kind of used to that pressure because I'm bringing it internally, and then the external pressures don't bother me just because I've already set those. But yeah, I think personally, I'm very like a team focused player. If they weren't taking stats and like publicizing them every week, that's not something I would be keeping track of. And I think in one way, it's kind of silly because there's so much more that goes into a game, more than like the stats and the yards. But it is kind of cool to see in that way how you can impact a game. But like we on the team all know that every player is contributing in massive ways, even if it's not in the flashier roles. So just I keep that in mind for sure.
I like that. Every person has a part to play. It can be as simple as showing up to practice on time and giving your all. Every person has a part to play in that. But you mentioned, you know, the stats and you're keeping track of it. And, you know, your own teammate out there, Ellie Melick, she's coming at you. I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about here. You know, every week it seems like you guys are battling for something. And she was actually on this podcast a few weeks ago, so it was really fun to hear her story. But just if you want to give her a shout out, share a little bit with me. What's it like playing with such a talented player?
Yeah, she is such a great teammate. She like will celebrate every single person on the field for whatever it is that they're doing. I really appreciate that. She's definitely one of those kind of, you know, stall 6.5, where am I looking? It's probably to Dina types of players. And I love just kind of giving her opportunities to show off a little bit. Like I think she had a highlight catch from that week. And I remember I threw that one. I remember looking at it being a kind of a tough matchup and just being like, nah, 100% trust Dina on this. Let me just throw it out there. So yeah, there's like a particular joy in that, and I get that from her as well. So we kind of trade off back and forth, who's throwing, who's catching.
That's fun. You guys are both bringing it down, and the results are there, 2-0 to start the season. So really strong start. And she is fantastic. Again, she was on the podcast recently. If anyone out there hasn't listened to the episode, highly encouraged. She offers a lot of great advice and a lot of insight into her own story, which is really cool to see. But back to this season here, looking forward, how do you mentally prepare for this, right? It's very early into the season. And you mentioned there kind of falling short the last couple of seasons of bringing home that championship. Obviously, I would assume the goal is that championship. You know, we all play to win. How do you mentally prepare that? Yes, we're not quite there yet, but we have a strong start. What is that mental picture for you?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I don't take an off season insofar as like my training. I think the only difference in my off season and like pre and in season is just maybe the Frisbee specific drills. I don't do those as often just to give myself a break from the quick change of direction in cleats with people guarding you things. But I'm still training really hard year round. And I really appreciated this season. Our leadership has done a lot of kind of mental toughness framing with us in the form of either meetings or emails. And we've done some film review weekly about watching film from last season. And as these games start to happen, you know, watching the early Arizona games and things like that. So I think going in prepared, both physically and mentally, and then just keeping in mind that our focus is on us, you know, like we can scout and know what they do and then come up with a plan for it. And then our full focus is on our plan and what we're doing.
I love it. There's so much that goes into it, right? The scouting, the film, the preparation. Talk to me a little bit more about that staff, the coaching staff there, and the supporting staff that you guys have on Super Bloom. I think there's so much that they provide to any team. Those are invaluable members to an organization. But what is that like? What is that dynamic like for you guys on and off the field?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of trust there going both ways. Everyone on our coaching staff is really good at kind of player communication and management, and I think top to bottom on our roster, everyone feels valued on this team, which is just so important for the dynamic and having people play to their potential. Even if you have someone who might not get as many points in a game, it is even more crucial for them when they step on the field to like play their role and being really like conservation of the disc focus and things like that. And it makes such a big difference. It kind of allows players who have higher touches and need to make the more dangerous and risky throws. It kind of gives us those extra turnovers versus, you know, you only get so many turnovers per game on a team is the way I look at it. So like, are the right people taking those turnovers?
I think that's so like, important.
Yeah.
It's the pieces that people don't appear on the stat sheet in a way. Like if you play incredible defense for like 9 seconds and you force a wild throw, right? People, you know, untrained eye aren't always going to pick up on that. But as teammates, you're like, that's it. That's what you so need to do. It's so important. All right. Dina talked about that too. We had a question on focusing on how to be a good mark. Right, it's so important, those little things. It's not always making your bid downfield, making your crazy plays. So everyone plays a role, right? We just talked about that as well.
Yeah, and your teammates notice those things, even if, you know, the social media side doesn't pick up on it.
Exactly. That's even more important, right? Because you guys are a community.
Yeah.
I love it. And yeah, like you said, the goal is to propel you guys forward this season. And in your own right, though, you are a champion, right? In the college scene and the club scene. So drawing on those experiences, has that just propelled you into this Western Ultimate League of adding just that experience to your team here?
Yeah, I think like I played for Fury for a lot of years, and Fury is a very team system base where the whole point is everyone buys into the team system so aggressively that no one person needs to be a star and like use their star power. So like if you watch Fury, if it's being done right, it's boring offense, right? And then defense is where you kind of flip the switch and grind. So I played in that system for a lot of years, and I think in 2019 I played with Revolution Pro in the PUL, first year of the PUL, and their system is basically the opposite of that. You can't just like cut to clear space. You'll never touch the disc on that team. You have to be really aggressive about taking space. No one will just give it to you. No one will leave it for you. So I think that was really an important reminder for me as a player of just like regaining that aggressive space attack that I think I had just like let go dormant a little bit on Fury for a lot of years. Yeah, so that was a good like transition for me and kind of propelled me into like the next couple of years of play where I did continue to play with Fury. We did win PUL with Revolution. And then I was able to make the World Games team in 2022. And I think that had a lot to do with that aggressive play style.
I think it's really important is exposure to different styles of play, mm-hmm. right? You just said in your own experience that each kind of team had a different feel to it. How important is that? Instead of just getting stuck and say, this is just who I am as a player, this is all I do, trying to almost get away from that poverty of imagination and explore other things. How important is that? It's like development of a player.
Gosh, I think that's probably one of the most important. I think it's like, for example, I hate offense and defense lines. Fury doesn't do own D lines in the traditional.
Talk to me more about that too. I would love to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of years there was no O and D lines. It was just like two pods, and you go out on the field when it's your turn, and it doesn't matter if it's O or D. And I think that instilled in me like a very, I'm very comfortable in basically every situation you can be in playing ultimate. And I think even when you do have strict O and D lines, like offense is going to turn it. And you're going to have to play D, and hopefully defense is going to get a block and you're going to have to play offense. So that flexibility and kind of resiliency, I think, that I learned early on Fury has served me incredibly well just jumping to new systems or like on these Worlds teams where you really only have three practice weekends and then you're competing at the highest level.
I would love to talk more about the O and D line versus two lines. I'm familiar more with it. Just two kind of more evenly spaced lines. That's why I played in college was like that. And went to these tournaments and people are O and D lines. And I'm like, this is kind of weird. This is not what we do. I think there are definitely, you know, some advantages to both sides. Do you have, do you lean a certain way with it? Do you have philosophies of which would actually be more effective? I'd love to dive a little more into that.
Yeah, ideally I would like to not do O and D lines. Like I said, it makes you more dangerous across the board. It makes you really hard to scout because any seven on the team could be out on a line on offense. So that's kind of a nightmare if you're about to play us. You have no idea what combination or who's doing what, who's handling even sometimes. So I really enjoy that part of it. And I think the weather or the team you're playing against may lend itself better to a particular group of players. So it just makes you more dynamic as a team. That being said, I think the downside of that is you don't always put people in the places that they excel the most. So you may not put someone in a position where they're able to show their superpower over and over in a game. It may kind of by chance pop up occasionally and they can use it, but you're not getting placed there intentionally. So that is the downside to that, but for me, that trade-off is worth it.
I love it. Listen to you there. It's very, comes across analytical. You have this coaching mindset. And that is a perfect segue into this next question, which you do some coaching on the side as well. Yes, maybe not quite the side is the correct way to put it, but you are very involved with the San Diego Growlers, the UFA team, which I think is an amazing way. I think coaching is so impactful and so powerful, and what a really cool way to give back to a sport. So if you want to share a little bit, how did you first get involved with the Growlers?
Yeah, so actually started getting involved with AADL or UFA now in 2013 when I lived in San Francisco. I was kind of involved with the Spiders, like went to a couple practices and things like that. I moved to Raleigh in 2016. And was continuing to play for Fury. So it felt a little weird to go out to like the women's team practices because I was actively on another roster. So I asked the Raleigh Flyers if I could join their practices, which turned into being a practice player with them. And then when I moved to San Diego, I did the same thing with the Growlers. So practiced as a practice player. And I think like I have a lot of thoughts on that as well. Just like playing against men was really helpful for me. It just kind of changes. It just makes you grow in different aspects of your game, which was really helpful. But the next year I was thinking about trying, like actually trying out for the roster, because that was not something I had ever done. I had just wanted the reps. And I went up to one of the owners at their, our banquet at the end of the year. I was like, hey, I wanted to talk to you about next season. And he was like, oh, I want to talk to you about next season too. I was wondering if you would coach. And I was like, oh, I was going to try out for a roster spot. And he was like, oh, if you want to do that, like, yes, definitely. I was like, no, you're right. I can add more to this team as a coach than as a potential roster player. So, yeah, started as an assistant coach. And then this is my third year as co-head coach.
That's a great story there. And I think it's a testament to the relationship you have with the organization, the comfortability with the owner, and then the owner already anticipating thinking is like, I would love for this woman to be a part of my organization even more. So that's I think it's a really good testament to that group of people there. Talking a little bit more about that, what has that balance been like? You're playing Frisbee a whole lot yourself, you're getting reps in, but you also have this responsibility as a coach and plays a major role in that organization. And those seasons go on at the same time. How have you been able to juggle both those worlds?
Yeah, it's a lot. And I've been in this position the last couple seasons of basically every weekend is double or triple booked in some way. So needing to figure out my priorities early on. Luckily, my co-head coach for Growlers, Kevin Stewart, has been coaching the team since, 2014, I think. Whenever I'm gone, like I know he's got it covered. I'm not worried at all, so that's helpful. But I also want to be at everything possible. But for now, as a player, I need to prioritize my playing opportunities. So if it's a Growlers game versus a WL game, I'll choose to play. If it's a Growlers game versus a WL practice, I'll choose the Growlers game. So it kind of works out in that way, priority-wise. And there's definitely going to be a lot of conflicts, but WL starts earlier, which is helpful. And yeah, we'll see. Like three weekends from now, there's a doubleheader for Growlers where we're doing Seattle and Portland Saturday, Sunday. And there's a Saturday night Super Bloom game in San Francisco. So I'm flying up to that, playing, and then flying up for a Portland game. So
I love the commitment. That's incredible. Absolutely throwing yourself on the line for these two groups of people. So that's really special there. Okay. And sticking with I think coaching again is a wonderful way to give. I do coaching on the side, not for Frisbee, for high school track, which is a love of mine. And working with people and you see them improve and you have a part to play in that is really powerful. What has been one of the most rewarding parts about coaching for you?
Yeah. For me, it's the little things like, you're explaining a new concept or working on a fundamental or a new positioning on an upline cut or something. You can kind of tell when it clicks for someone. And like watching that moment happen is really rewarding for me, especially the people who you may have to have said it like four or five different ways. Like when it finally clicks, it's just like, it's such a great feeling. I love just seeing that happen and then seeing that being implemented on the field. And actually, I think two seasons ago, I had a player move to Denver, and he reached out. He had gone and tried out for like Johnny Bravo, at the time. And he reached out and said, like, I just got it. Like, I just now am appreciating what you've been telling me the last like 3 years, because I showed up here and they're all saying the same thing and I already knew it. And like, it made the integration into a new community and a new just like ultimate setting so much easier. And like hearing stuff like that is just so great and rewarding for me.
That's so special. I love it. And now a little bit of a shift here. I want you to take me all the way back. How did you first kind of come about Frisbee? It's obviously something that's dominated your life here, to say the least. But where did it all begin? What was your first exposure with this sport?
Yeah, so I played soccer and ran track through high school, and my plan was to play soccer in college. And I had played ultimate in middle school, like in the parking lot, in the gravel parking lot, on breaks and things like that. And so I knew that was something I liked to do. And when I went to UCSB for college, and I went to go to the soccer tryout and basically mixed up my days, like classic freshman move, just like with my
Oh
schedule and all
no.
that. So I missed the first soccer tryout, and when I went to talk to the coach, they had so many people show up for the first tryout. He basically was like, I have no incentive to give you an extended tryout and come back next year. And I'm way too competitive of a person to not do a sport. So one of my friends from middle school who went to the same high school as me went to UCSB, and he had told me he like played on the Black Tides, a men's team. So he had told me about it. So I ended up going out to a practice and never went back to soccer. There's just that feeling of chasing down a frisbee that you can't get in any other sport that I just fell in love with right away. And like, yeah, I was all in from that very first practice.
Definitely, probably a little regret from the soccer coach, but your college gained a great player, and the sport of ultimate gained a great player as well. And to stick at college here, so many people talk about college. It's a very unique time with a team, right? You only have a few years, and you soak up as much as you can. You did win in the college level, which was really cool. If you just want to give a favorite memory or two of your college Frisbee days, what would you share?
Yeah, I think so. One of my freshman class cohorts happened to be Carolyn Finney, who's, one of the best female players in the game. And we were both new to ultimate together, and coming from high school sports where we were like, travel level, our high schools were winning in those sports, just like coming from a winning background, basically. Showing up to ultimate new sport, but bringing that same mentality. And I remember going to Centex, and we had a very encouraging and like great group of veterans on our team. And I remember going and playing Centex, and we won Centex. And Finney and I were like, well, yeah, obviously. Like, of course we won, because that's just the mentality that we had. And we look at the vets, and they could not believe it. Like, they're sobbing on each other's shoulders. Like, this is. They couldn't believe they won such a big tournament. And for us, it was like, well, yeah, obviously. So I think like that's kind of a highlight memory for me, because Finney and I have played together since then, all the way through at every level, club, worlds, college, up through. We're on this mixed worlds team this summer together. So I'm like so glad that I had her from the very beginning.
That's special. I think the testament too to the sport is like those friends you meet, they're usually along for a wild ride with you through the years. Even if you're not playing with them on the same teams, those people stick around, that community still exists. And that's especially important with college, I think. Because you do life with those teammates, or you go to class, you go practice, you live with, in the same dorm room or apartments with these guys or teammates. And that's just another further testament why I think people should just buy into their college teams and give it their all, because it's going to create some of the best friends and best memories you have. So
Yeah.
that's really cool you have that connection here. And yeah, you're going to Worlds again with her as your teammate again.
Yep.
So congratulations for making that team here.
Thank you.
Would you share with me just what is the process for getting on one of these Worlds teams? I'm sure it's pretty darn competitive out there, but share with me a little bit what that looks like.
Yeah. I think I have a unique way of approaching tryouts, which is like I prep a lot and very minutely. The way I look at it is like, first of all, you have to be a very a player that is comfortable in multiple roles to make a team like this. Like they're asking for you to do a lot of different types of things. So I think I have an advantage there already, where that is the type of player I am, where you can kind of plug me in anywhere. But I truly believe you could make the rosters for these teams out of any group of the players at tryouts. Like, you end up with these three rosters, but you could swap players on all the rosters and still have, like, elite caliber teams. So to me, it's all about the tryout. Like, they obviously consider your body of work, but my goal is to take the decision about putting me on the roster or not away from the coaches. Like, play so well at tryouts that it's not a decision for them. They watch me play and they're like, well, she's on the team. This isn't am I going to put her on the team or not? So that's my goal. And then I firmly believe that, like, the level of prep, the level of film you have available to you, you can put that to work before tryouts so that by the time you show up to tryouts, you shouldn't be surprised by any situation you run into. Like, I literally watched film on every single female on matching player on the West Coast tryout list, and a lot of the men's players as well, and took notes on them as far as, like, what their release points are, what their tendencies are, like, what their biggest threat is, how do I want to force them? Like, I literally come up with a plan for each player based on the film that I've watched of how I want to play them. So then you're not deciding that when you step on the field and, you know, you're guarding Claire Chastain, you don't have to figure out in the one or two reps how I'm going to guard her, or, like, she has to break me, you know, low backhand twice before I put my hand there. No, I've already seen it on film. That's our starting point. And then now I can, you know, ratchet it up from there. So I think I might be unique in this approach, but it's very fun for me, and I've had really good tryouts because of it.
Yeah, it pays off. The proof is out there. You made the teams. You've excelled where you are. But yeah. I think that is so powerful to hear. I think people need to understand the amount of work it takes to be at the top of a sport. And in this case, Frisbee, it's not just something you walk out to a field and say, I'm going to go do this. Sure, that's where you can start. But to be at the top level, it requires so much effort. And I think something that's come out throughout this entire conversation with you is this idea of competitiveness, right? You love to compete at every level. You've talked about it from, you know, where does that come from? Where does that desire, this love of competition, this hunger for it to go be the best you can be on the field? What is your drive?
Yeah, I'm actually not sure. It's just kind of a natural state for me. I know that my sister and I used to play with this particular group of friends, and she was 5 years older than me, so all the friends were kind of her age. And I remember being told over and over, like, I wasn't allowed to play whatever the sport was because I was too small. And so my plan was, like, well, I'll just get really good at this on my own, and then you'll have to let me play. So that might have, like, a slight part of it. But yeah, I've always been really interested in, like, athletic and sports things. Yeah, it's just fun for me. I like improving and seeing how far I can go.
Just get a little bit better every day, and you leave it all out there. I think that's a story we're talking about right now. So amazing, absolutely amazing there. And you just keep on giving, keep giving back to the sport. And we can see that payoff. I think you have a voice in this sport, and the sport continues to grow. You look at the growth of the UWL the last couple of years. You mentioned the PUL as well. Like, these things continue to grow. From your experience, being kind of the voice you have, you know, the MVPs, people recognize that name. You have the world's teams to your name as well. What are some areas of growth that you've seen over the last couple of years? And then take me looking ahead a little bit too. What are some things you'd like to see come along?
Yeah. So I also own a business that does summer camps for high school age. It's called Cut Camp. So I've been coaching there for a lot of years, and then became the owner in 2018. It has been so cool to see, like, the level of player that shows up at camp. The first year I coached, it was like they were maybe had started in seventh or eighth grade. And those players were like, oh, I've already been playing for 2 or 3 years. And now I have campers showing up and they've been playing for 7 or 8 years. And so, like, the level of play as a freshman or sophomore in high school is just getting, like, better and better, and, like, raising the bar. That is so incredibly exciting for me, where, you know, the players that I coached my first year at Cut Camp are now, you know, matching up on me in the club division and making these world's rosters. And like, that is kind of hilarious, but also like so amazing to see. And I'm just like so happy and proud of them and excited for where the sport's going. And like, yeah, just that people are coming in, starting earlier, starting with better and better coaching, because you're getting this like the, you know, next level of players are coming back and coaching youth, and they've gotten all this experience, so they know what they're talking about. And like really just seeing the level of play go up and then seeing the strategies have to follow that.
And looking ahead, do you see that is kind of the future of the sport? You know, youth is such an area that propels everything else forward. Do you just think, see that continuously growing? Do you see other ways that the you know, women's side, just Frisbee in general, are going to continue to grow?
Yeah, definitely. I think pro has helped so much with visibility. Like I've done a decent number of international camps, like coached at international camps and things like that. And one thing I noticed is the teams and the play that those players are following, a lot of that is pro, just because it's much more accessible. You know, you have free games on YouTube, there's stuff all over social media following the players, promoting the players. And so it's just easier to watch and follow along. Same for parents and friends and things like that. Like the number of years I've been playing club, it's kind of hard to explain to parents, like, okay, this is how you watch my pool play games, versus like, okay, I have a WL game this weekend. It's on YouTube for free. It's very easy to find that link if I forget to text it, you know? And that like accessibility is huge for the sport, and will have a lot of trickle down lasting changes. So for me, it's really important to play pro, and get a lot of like eyes and exposure on the sport in that way, because I think it'll help in a lot of different areas, youth and club.
You mentioned the word visibility, which is a great mm-hmm. word, and it sticks out for you because you've done a little video talking about visibility and this idea of hard work, providing a platform to show what hard work can do. Would mm-hmm. you just share with us, what is that dynamic? What does visibility and hard work mean for you?
Yeah, there's kind of a weird ultimate specific thing where you're kind of fighting against that it doesn't appear to be a real sport, right? Like from the outside, it doesn't have the respect that these more well-established sports do. So, you know, the number of times on an airplane, I'm talking to the person next to me on the chair and I say ultimate and they're like, oh yeah, and they're thinking disc golf, or they're thinking, you know, with the dogs, whatever. So when I say ultimate, the next step is like, oh, you know, it's the hippie sport. It's the, you know, I played that on the field when I ran track in college at, you know, when we were just messing around. So like they're you're fighting against that legitimacy. And I think showing the amount of effort and training and strategy that goes in behind the scenes is really important to have the sport gain that legitimacy. So I used to kind of fallen off in the last year, but I used to just like post videos of me working out all the time to an obnoxious amount. I would just, every time I went to the gym, I would post a video, and that ends up being, you know, a lot of times per week. And I think the point being like, this is what it takes to play at the level that I play at. And I want people to kind of realize that and respect it and then strive for that, hopefully.
Love it. And I want to go back real quick to Cut Camp. There's another way you provide visibility for the sport to show up. It is legit. And yeah, I know you mentioned you're the owner now and you've been running this for years. If you just want to share, how'd you get into this? Like, why are you giving? It's an amazing way to give back. Like, how did you initially get back there and then to reach the level where you're running this thing? Share a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I tried out for Fury initially my senior year of college because of the coach. And I think coming from other sports and transitioning to ultimate, you understand how important a coach is. And we had a lot of really good people helping us out in college and like running some practices and things, but I never felt like we had you know, a consistent program building force. And I wanted to get better as a player, and I knew I could either try and do that on my own by playing, or I could go to a team that had a really well-known coach and kind of accelerate that growth. So I did that, and just like the speed at which I could improve. And with Fury, we did a lot of clinics. You know, we went down to TUP in Colombia and went a week early and ran clinics for our players there and things like that. That just got me kind of into learning how to communicate skills that I had early on. So listening to Maddie saying talk and learning from him, and then kind of turning around and being able to like articulate that in my own way to players. I just found that really rewarding and started seeking out opportunities for that early. So I've always been doing like youth clinics, adult clinics. Whenever I go international for a world's team or something, usually I'm going early or staying late, and doing some kind of camp. So got involved with Cut Camp, and just enjoyed it so much. Like the kids just are sponges for information. So just so great. And then, yeah, like it's a passion of mine. So the kind of natural next step was to get more involved. And the original founder was having a baby and didn't have time to run it anymore. And I was one of the, luckily in the inner circle of people that he was thinking about to pass the torch to.
Something that has come up over and over again tonight is this idea of coaching, of providing an opportunity for knowledge and a good environment where people can absorb that knowledge, and just how critical that is to a growth of a player. If you want to give a piece of advice from a coaching perspective on how to create a good environment that is conducive for players to learn to grow in this sport, what would you share?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is like practice is a safe to fail space. If you're doing a break mark drill and no one's getting hand blocked, like, what are we really learning from this? The throwers aren't pushing themselves enough. The marks aren't good enough. Like, so setting the bar at you need to fail to improve, and you need to have good competition to raise your own level of competition. The next thing is always explain the why you're doing something. Not only the why, but the how. Like, I don't know how many times you've heard someone like yell, don't get beat up line. It's like, sure, but how? Like, literally show me the footwork and where to position myself so that I don't get beat up line. And the last thing is, you know, keep your points to a minimum and say the same point in a couple different ways. Because the particular way that you're saying it may work for 6 of the 20 people, and then the next way you say it, you may get 7 more of the people. And it's just like that one time or the one way you say it may be that breakthrough moment.
Well, I think we all definitely need reminders there, and anyone can take those and readily apply them to their own situations. Okay, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing your story so far tonight. And this kind of brings us to the close of the interview, though. I just want to open the floor up. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think I've had a lot of like incredible opportunities to play at high levels and with new teams and on these world teams. And like, I want to, hopefully it's come across that like, I want to share that knowledge and encourage like the next generation coming up to, you know, take this sport to the next level. Get people to respect it because it's impressive. Like, not only is it fun to play and fun to watch, but like, if you're doing it right, this is a really hard sport to play and get, you know, get to that top level at. And yeah, hopefully I can inspire people to do that. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes next.
You are a walking testament to that. I appreciate your time, Kayla, your story. Thank you for sharing your hunger and your competitiveness for the sport. I think it's been very inspiring for me. I think it definitely is inspiring for those out there listening as well. So just thank you so much for being here.
Of course. Thank you for having me. It's good talking
to you. Definitely. And everyone out there, make sure you go check out Kayla Helton on Instagram. Check out Super Blue on Instagram. Follow along them as they continue this season, as they're hoping to bring home their first championship as well. And we can see if Kayla wins her third MVP. And always make sure you check out the Breakside on Instagram at Breakside_podcast. And this brings us to the end of episode 47. This is David Adamitis with Kayla Helton of the San Diego Super Bloom. Thanks for listening. Have a great night.